Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
There is much to be learned from this young man. And so I say with my family, God bless you and your family, Charlie.
The Supreme Court decided that profiling people is like a fair thing for the government to do. Pulling them over because of how they look or how they sound and questioning them.
We're facing a tough budget year and we're with a lot of uncertainty coming from the federal government, and we want to act responsibly and ensure that we're safeguarding taxpayer dollars and not increasing budgets to a level that's not sustainable.
There is no promise this is going to return to the council. This is an epically important item for this city council. I'm stunned right now and speechless that this is where we are.
It's outrageous that a spokesperson for the Scottsdale Unified School District should be making disparaging remarks about the employees and people who are really trying to help the health of our student population.
You hear people use the term transparency, and they say we got to have more transparency in the political process. But the answer to that is that transparency is for the government. Privacy is for people.
And with me to talk about the Scottsdale City Council punting on a decision about whether to state, another potential ethics complaint at the state capitol, and more, are Paul Bentz of High Ground. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
And Don Penich of Agave Strategies. Don, good morning to you.
You too.
So, guys, we have to start with, of course, the biggest story of the week, the assassination of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. And there's going to be a lot. There has been a lot already this morning. We heard from the governor of Utah that they have a suspect in custody. I want to focus more, though. Arizona has obviously a very sad and interesting, in some ways, connection to this kind of political violence, of course, with former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords being shot many, many years ago at this point. And we seem to hear the same kinds of thoughts after these events, you know, from politicians. We have to, you know, we have to think about how we're talking. We have to tone down the rhetoric, that kind of thing. And yet in this case, like, Don, we saw, for example, members of Congress kind of yelling at each other, like over a moment of silence. We have seen members of Congress from both parties still like saying the kinds of things that they were saying a week or 2 weeks ago. Is it possible at this point, do you think, to tone down the rhetoric in politics?
You know, I hate to start off the morning with such kind of a dark statement, but I do, and I think a lot of people do, feel a level of despair around how we are functioning as a society that I haven't felt before or in a very long time. And it kind of does beg the question of where do we go from here? What does it take? What kind of reckoning does American society need to actually want to do the platitudes that feel so empty that we always hear about, you know, rising above and toning down rhetoric? I think it's true, but I agree with you. I am not in the aftermath of this most recent gun, you know, violence. I'm not seeing that out there. And I wish I could say that I know what it takes, but I don't know that anyone does.
Yeah. Well, and Paul, this, of course, follows not that far on the heels of the shooting in Minnesota, where state legislators were targeted and at least one was assassinated. Like, what are we doing here?
Well, first of all, one thing to know is absolutely this was a tragedy, just like many of these other things were a mm-hmm. tragedy. It's tragic that there was a shooting at a Colorado school the same day that doesn't hardly get any coverage, that seems to be de rigueur at this point, that we can talk about school shootings and sort of go past them and focus on other issues. That's incredibly tragic. This is a mental health issue. I don't think we'll hear Republicans say that a lot, but unfortunately, it certainly is a mental health issue in addition to a political discussion. And I think ultimately one of the things that's been said, I think that's really valid, is that this comes down to an issue of contempt. It's not even just rhetoric at this point, is that both sides hold the other in contempt. And the language surrounding that is not that we even just disagree, is that I have contempt for you. You are evil and I am righteous. And that creates a lot of this back and forth here, where you're just not even hearing the other side, and that is what makes this violence more acceptable, unfortunately, and why people see They turn this dissatisfaction into contempt. One of the things that Charlie Kirk did incredibly well, I think, is going onto these college campuses and recognizing that there was dissatisfaction among a portion of the young population about what these universities were doing, about what they were focused on, and trying to start that dialogue. And while it probably started in a good spot or in a spot that would have been helpful, it turned into, with social media and everything else, this item of celebrity, this item of contempt. They got more views, the worse they got, the more that they turned it up. And I think that's the what has happened here and why he's reaping what we're getting now.
It's so interesting because, you know, you hear stories about both, you know, here in Arizona and in Washington, D.C., about, you know, back in the day, politicians from different parties could, you know, fight like heck on the floor of whatever chamber they were in and then go have dinner together or go, you know, have a beer together in the evening, that while they disagreed about the issues, they recognized that they were all kind of members of this fairly exclusive club and, you know, at least could be friends. Like maybe some of them in, you know, in D.C. had, you know, room together or something. Donna, based on what Paul said and what we've heard elsewhere, like it just doesn't seem like that happens anymore.
No. And, you know, one of the reasons I say that this, I feel so much more dismayed this, you know, this week is because it is sowing and deepening divisions across parties who do disagree. A number of elected officials and even just community groups have been canceling their events, all of their public events this week because of increased direct threats being called into their offices. And even within folks who do agree with each other, so, you know, my community on the left, right, there is disagreement over people who are pointing out the very real and targeted harm that Charlie Kirk and some of the rhetoric that he, you know, promoted has caused here in Arizona. And then there are also folks on the left saying this kind of violence is never okay, no matter what this person had to say. And so even folks who agree with each other are now fighting. And that's what happens. Martin Luther King, right, said that violence begets violence, anger begets anger. And that's what we are seeing across the board.
Paul, speaking of not toning down rhetoric, the Arizona House Democratic Caucus this week said that they were planning to file an ethics complaint against Representative John Gillette. He's a Republican from Kingman who had some, I won't repeat them, but some pretty unkind things to say about Muslims. This is not the first sort of interim ethics complaint that we've been talking about in the state legislature since the session has ended. I'm curious what you make of not only the fact that he said these things, but then when asked by a reporter about them, he kind of doubled down on them and doesn't seem to think that there's a problem with the things that he said.
Well, it speaks to the unapologetic nature of politics. It also speaks to our, quite frankly, our legislative district system where most people are from safe legislative districts. He's from an incredibly safe Republican district. His Republican base that elects him in the primary doesn't have a problem with that type of language. In fact, you know, they're anti-woke and they're anti all of the DEI and everything else. And they think that this sort of language reflects that and it's telling it like it is. And these people get rewarded from their base. And this happens on both sides of the aisle. This is not just a Republican issue. This is a Democrat issue where the more progressive language certainly gets them where they want to go in a lot of cases as well. But in this case, it's certainly one of those things that he says something. Most folks don't think it's okay, but then it's serving his base and then outrage. And then he gets to go back to his base and say, see, the people that we have contempt for, back to that contempt idea, disagree with me. So I must be doing something right.
Don, do you see anything coming from this?
From the ethics complaint?
Yeah,
you mean?
In the legislature?
No, probably not. We've had lots of instances of folks, maybe not particularly this exact, you know, anti-Islamic rhetoric, but we've had lots of other folks in the legislature say abhorrent things and nothing has happened, not even really a slap on the wrist. And then you put it in the context of an election year and that Republicans don't want to be beat up by the more extreme wing of the party for doing even what they know is right. No, I don't think we'll see anything come of this whatsoever.
Do you anticipate that this might have any kind of effect on like how the House works next year? No, I have no idea if Representative Gillette works with Democrats on issues or if they are looking to get him to sign on to bills or anything like that. But I wonder if, you know, the act of filing an ethics complaint, assuming that House Democrats follow through on what they say they're going to do, and the fact that this representative said what he said, like, does that affect anything?
No, and I think that, in fact, everyone is just kind of preparing themselves for what is probably going to be one of the most divided and toxic legislative sessions that we've seen in a long time, which, if you know, the Arizona legislature is really saying things. So, you know, gird yourself. It's going to be a tough ride next year.
But I think we're going to see a lot of political theater next year. I think
in an election year,
in
Paul,
an election,
come on.
You know, certain time. Yeah, I know. It's hard to predict. I mean, the budget discussion was already pretty negative and nasty this year. I think it will be even worse. I think the Republicans will bring forth a lot of the similar bills that they have in the past to try to make and score political points in the this midterm election. This midterm election should benefit Republicans. They overperformed in the 2024 election by a lot. There was a lack of Democratic enthusiasm. In the midterms, Republicans do even better typically in the state. With the exception of 2022, Republicans have dominated midterms, and I think they're looking to do that again this year. So I think that type of rhetoric, the type of bills that they're going to bring forth, are all reflective of their strategy to put the governor in a tough spot, to put their Democratic opponents in a tough spot, and try to gain seats in some of these critical swing districts. You know, Republicans have – they went from a one-vote majority to a larger majority in both chambers. I think they're going to try to increase that this year as well, or next year as well.
Guys, let's talk about the Scottsdale City Council. They were under a lot of pressure, it seems, to vote. It's kind of a convoluted story here, but basically there are a number of people in Scottsdale who wanted the council to vote to sue the state over a law that stopped an election over a decision that a previous council had made. And if you can follow all that, you're a better person than I. Don, I'm curious what you make of the fact that the city council basically tabled it. They didn't say yes. They didn't say no. They just kind of said, not right now.
Yeah, well, I think they're just trying to prolong what is a bit of a dumpster fire politically, and just kind of kick the can down the road. You know, ultimately, and Scottsdale itself and many powerful interests within Scottsdale and the state level are really torn over this. Here's this massive employer, who wants to do a lot of development, you know, a high-end hotel, which is something that the current Scottsdale leadership really likes, but also apartments, which the current Scottsdale leadership has said they do not want any more apartments, no matter what the housing situation is in Arizona. But there's 5,500 jobs that would be turning away. Axon themselves have said that they've never seen a more toxic negotiation process. So it's kind of a no-win situation that I think they just decided they don't want to tackle right now, but it's not going away. And there are very strong feelings. And what's also true is that the state has very clear authority to do exactly what they did.
Well, and Paul, it's interesting. As Don said, this issue is not going away. The people who are anti the development have made that pretty clear. So theoretically, at some point, the council is going to have to take a stand on this. I wondered, like, does it make it harder to do that when you've already sort of punted on it once?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's a challenging issue. You've got this large economic driver that is probably one of the most known national brands that we have in Arizona. Axon's the producer of Taser, for those who don't know. And in addition to that, you know, Scottsdale has a long history of there being an anti-growth crowd that is also transformed into a little bit of an anti-apartment crowd and sort of a not-in-my-backyard crowd that is very vocal and has been very influential over the years. And so you've got this conflict. They're tabling the issue right now. I think there are some more – one of the articles I read talked about that there's more legal maneuvering in part of that, and that the city's also – hoping maybe to bring back to the table to do some negotiation. Back to our original point about political dialogue, negotiation, compromise, finding a way to work together. I think there's a way to make this a win-win, hopefully. I mean, we want to keep these jobs here in Arizona, but we also want the people in the community to be happy as well. And so, you know, you would look at those individuals, and we're not a part of that, but just say, hey, maybe we can find a way to compromise and come out with something that's good for both sides.
Do you think the ship has sailed on negotiation, on coming up with a compromise?
From what I read in one of the articles, it sounds like maybe, but I mean, there's always never say never. I mean, certainly back to what Don was talking about, Martin Luther King, I say the world misses a John McCain right now. We need more statesmen. We need more people who are convening forces that bring people together and want to find solutions to issues instead of just scoring political points.
Don, do you think it's possible that they can come up with a compromise that everybody can at least live with?
I think so. I think at least this signals to me that by putting this off, that they actually are reopening the door to start conversations that had really, you know, crashed earlier.
So, guys, one of you had mentioned the budget for next year just a moment or two ago, and Governor Hobbs is basically signaling to state agencies and seemingly everyone else, this is not going to be a great budget year coming up. The state is poised to lose a decent amount of money based on the federal the tax cut law that Congress passed recently and President Trump signed into law. So given that it's an election year, Don, given that, as you both have talked about, how it might not be the most pleasant legislative session, now we're throwing into it, you know, state agencies, what, like a 2% increase and that's it? Really no money for anything else. What does that mean for the session and for the budget, do you think?
Well, if there's a silver lining to this, hopefully it means that it's a short session, which when you have less money to fight over and you have less to negotiate with, and it's an election year and people want to be out knocking doors and talking to their voters, it might mean that it's ugly and dirty, but we get out of there quickly. And, you know, there are a lot of factors. We knew as a state that we were going to be looking at, you know, a bad budget. Then the federal, you know, decisions have piled onto that. And so there's only so much that the legislature can do. And when your hands are tied, there's really no reason to stick around.
Yeah, Paul, sort of the conventional wisdom is when there's no money, you just say no to everybody and then you kind of move on, right?
Right. Well, we were not going to see the Oprah budget where you get a special project and you get a special project and the rodeo gets a special project. I think we're going to definitely see less of that. I also suspect that the Republicans will start by offering a budget similar to that they did in the past, where it's either a maintenance budget or even a cut. I would not be surprised if Republicans came forth with a cut to start to try to, you know, balance the budget and right the ship. But we'll see. It'll definitely be a tough negotiation, and we'll see sort of where it ends up. The other thing, in addition to the federal tax cut, I mean, I think it's important to note that the legislature removed the rental tax, and the rental tax has harmed the cities as well. So not only is the state going to be suffering, but there's many cities out there that have lost significant revenue from what the rental tax is, and they're struggling with that as well. And so I think that's part of the ongoing discussion as well, is what does the municipalities look like? So it's not only from the state level, but I think we'll see a trickle-down effect in the cities as well.
How big – I mean, the budget obviously is sort of the elephant in the room for much of the session until the very end. I wonder, though, given what you both have talked about, all of the issues, maybe Republicans trying to put Democrats in a tough spot, the governor trying to put Republicans in a tough spot, where do you think the budget will be in terms of, like, the issue or the important issues of the session? Paul, what do you think?
I mean, certainly it always comes down to public safety and education. I think housing is going to be another big one that try to use that as a bargaining chip. And you know, every year we seem to try to do something regarding housing. I think those are sort of the bigger issues here. But I think Republicans are going to try to use, you know, immigration issues are still big for them and still the number one issue among Republicans. So I suspect that they'll try to use some version or some collection of immigration bills to try to negotiate or drive the discussion as well.
Don, what do you think?
Well, I think Democrats will, you know, have an obligation and will be looking at the voucher program, the private school voucher program, which is well over $1 billion at this point. Every week we see new headlines about the waste, fraud, and abuse that program is marked by. And, you know, every dollar that's going toward someone's, you know, private wardrobe, let's say, and trips to Disneyland and everything else is a dollar that we don't have for public schools, but for many other, you know, negotiating needs that the state has as well. And so Democrats will be looking at that. And I think where we'll eventually get is just kind of the status quo. Like, you know, Republicans will have their cuts to programs that they have contempt for, to use Paul's really accurate language. And in the end, the governor will protect those things, and then we'll just kind of we'll move forward with nothing extra.
Interesting. All right, guys, just a couple minutes left. I want to ask you about a former state lawmaker, Justine Watzak, was involved in a court case in southern Arizona over a traffic stop she had a few years back while she was in the legislature. She was not issued a ticket then at the time because the legislature was in session. She was then issued a ticket later. She filed a pretty big lawsuit claiming all sorts of civil rights violations and things like that. And Paul, she was seemingly almost to be held in contempt of court for not showing up to a hearing. And this week she said she was dropping the case. I wonder, though, because there had been rumors that Senator Wadsag might be looking to make a play to come back to the legislature. Does all this impact that at all, do you think?
Well, I certainly think behavior, that's one of the contributing factors. The speeding ticket and using her influence was part of it. I think there's other items that fell into that that sort of made her lose that primary last year. The person she ran against has now announced that he is not going to run for re-election, Senator Leach. I think certainly with that open seat, it would be very tempting for her to jump in. Rhetorically, she's been among the MAGA folks with the way that she's addressed these issues. I think she approached the lawsuit in a similar manner. But one of the things that we do find with Republicans is when the rubber hits the road, when there's actual legal ramifications, whether it's denying the election or whether it's denying a speeding ticket, whether it's when the actual law comes to call, then they sort of change their tune a little bit, or at least lighten up. But before, until that point, rhetorically, you know, they're fighting the man and they're standing up because, you know, they think it's the right thing to do.
Dawn, do you think this impacts her political future, this whole incident?
I think that she had a lot of kind of negative baggage around her. You know, she's very much, like Paul was indicating, someone who plays and profits off of the most extreme rhetoric and, you know, riling folks up. So she had a lot of baggage around her. This kind of thing doesn't help. I mean, anytime we see her name, it's for something negative. And in her, even in that district, voters don't like that. That's why they didn't have her back the first time.
All right, guys, we'll have to leave it there. Dawn Penich, Paul Bentz, thanks to you guys both for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.